It's Tuesday, so you've got me. I'm Carousel Baird. Hey, you can listen to me any day of the week online at WORTFM.org. If you like what you're hearing, click in the link below and any donation makes a huge difference.
6 foot six above sea level. I grab my mic because I like to take you to another mental level. Low power frequency radio modulation. The big sound from underground. We bring the truth to places truth is never heard before. We bring the sound communication
about. Hello and welcome to A Public Affair. It's Tuesday, so that means you've got me. I'm Carousel Baird. And here we still are during lovely pandemic times. I am here still safe in my home. I hope you are staying safe at home and wearing your masks and trying to stay out of big gatherings and honoring our safer at home requirements under the state and the county. And I want to remind everyone, you are listening to volunteer-powered, listener-sponsored community radio, WORT 89.9 FM Madison. So as you just heard in the announcement right before the show started, Election Day is 2 weeks from today. Thank goodness we're getting there. I'm sure we all wish Election Day had already passed and we were over that hump and onto the new horizons of what the next years can bring. But here we are talking about the elections nonstop. Thank you for listening to A Public Affair and WORT. We are trying to keep everyone up to date with all the election things that are happening. And today is no exception. I'm really excited for who we're going to talk with. We have Jeff Mandel joining us. He has been litigating handful of these cases in Wisconsin and beyond to fight for our rights to have access to the ballot box. Jeff, are you with us here?
I am. Thanks so much for having me, Carousel. It's good to be back.
It's great to have you. I'll introduce you just a little bit. Everyone, I hope, remembers Jeff. He's been here before. He's a partner at the law firm of Stafford Rosenbaum here in Madison. One of his focuses is election law. He co-chairs Stafford Rosenbaum's litigation practice and leads the firm's team focusing on appeals and election and political law. Between November 2018 and October 2019, Jeff argued 4 cases before the Wisconsin Supreme Court, more than any other private practice attorney lawyer in Wisconsin. Wow. Among these cases were the procedural challenge to the constitutionality of the Wisconsin legislature's lame duck extraordinary session that happened in December 2018. And Jeff has litigated appeals in every district in Wisconsin and in appellate courts across the country and has represented numerous amici before the U.S. Supreme Court. He also serves as the founding president of the Madison Lawyer Chapter of the American Constitution Society and is on the editorial board for the American Bar Association's Appellate Practice Journal. Lots of expertise. It's great to have you. And you're here in Madison. We have experts all the time, but to get one of the leaders that is also, you know, here in our city, it's just great. It's great to have you on the show today and here in Madison, Jeff. So let's sort of start off with first, how do you make of what is happening right now before we do a deeper dive into the many election law issues that are happening and some of them have concluded, many are still pending. Is this normal? Remind me, were we having these conversations 4 years ago?
I think that we were having some of these conversations 4 years ago, but certainly not as many as we're having now. This election is extremely important. It is motivating a lot of people to get out and get involved on all sides. And we say that every 4 years, right? Every election, it feels like, is the most important election of our lifetimes. But I think that we are seeing, just over the past couple of weeks, the number of celebrities and others who we've seen saying, I've lived my whole life and I've never voted, but I'm registering to vote. I'm getting involved this time. This election feels different. And one of the things that's happening in our country is that we're seeing a lot of questions about things, about parts of our democracy that we never questioned before, that we all always understood as axiomatic. And those things are being looked at more carefully right now. And a lot of them are being litigated. And some of that is voting rights. It is simply the case that there are a bunch of people in this country and in this state who don't really want everyone to have the opportunity to vote. And those of us who believe that voting is not a partisan issue It's a partisan exercise, and that you're choosing who you want to be the next, our next leaders, but that everyone who's an eligible voter should have the right to vote, have our hands full litigating that, because we are seeing really unprecedented challenges to access to the ballot box.
Yeah, I mean, I remember I graduated law school in 2000. And when I was in law school, I remember having classes on election law, but it really, I mean, I had one class that was just election law, and the professor was like, you know, there's not that much more than a semester worth of conversation, and not to downplay it, but I don't feel like when we were in that class, we thought that so many issues would still continue to be ripe and undecided. It's very fascinating how the courts have really become one of the important players in deciding our political future of the country.
I think that's exactly right. And we really saw that begin in some ways, this modern era of this with Bush v. Gore, where obviously the U.S. Supreme Court decided who was going to win the state of Florida in 2000 and therefore the election and lead our country. But it really has picked up. And we've seen since the U.S. Supreme Court a few years ago in the Shelby County decision struck down the Voting Rights Act and gave states a lot freer rein in changing their election laws. We've seen just a tremendous amount of foment and change and disruption in the rules around how we conduct elections, how we administer those elections. And that amount of change leads to more litigation because it leads to uncertainty in the law. Here in Wisconsin, as you well know, we've seen tremendous change. It was not that many years ago that elections in this state were overseen by the state elections board. And then we changed that, right? The state elections board was a bipartisan body that had some Republicans and some Democrats. We changed that and we decided to have a nonpartisan election administration through the Government Accountability Board. And after several years, the legislature and then Governor Walker decided they didn't like that. And they went back to the bipartisan model, where we now have a Wisconsin Elections Commission that is designed very much like the Federal Elections Commission. It has three Democratic appointees and three Republican appointees. And as a result, the Elections Commission deadlocks on a lot of things. And when the Elections Commission deadlocks, that just furthers the uncertainty about what the law is and how our elections run.
That's really interesting, the history of that. I mean, I think that merits a further conversation in the future of, you know, some of this is because that's the way politics works, but some of this is by design, right? It was intended to create a level of chaos and partisanship that has risen to this level. Very interesting. So, Jeff, there's so much to talk about, and we were talking before the show started of all the cases we could. So can we start with the case regarding the return of absentee ballots that is now pending before the U.S. Supreme Court? And I don't know if pending actually is the right word, because usually when you think pending, that means the U.S. Supreme Court's going to have a hearing and make a formal decision. Back us up a little bit and talk to us about what is this case that you're a part of?
Sure. So there are actually, there are four cases. And they're all, I agree with you, pending is kind of a strange word because it suggests that we've gone through the normal process of briefing and argument at the Supreme Court. But these cases are all sort of sitting at the Supreme Court and we're waiting to see what is going to happen. These are four separate cases that began in the Western District of Wisconsin, which is the federal court here in Madison. And I am counsel in two of them. The four cases, just so we're all clear, one of them is Democratic National Committee versus Bostelman. Ms. Bostelman is, fortunately or unfortunately for her, the member of the Wisconsin Elections Commission whose name comes first if you list them alphabetically. So she winds up having a lot of these cases named after her. That was a case that was filed before the April election, initially seeking an extension of the online voter registration deadline to account for the COVID-19 pandemic, which was really just beginning in March when that case was filed. And a second case in this bunch is Gear versus Knudsen. Mr. Knudsen is another member of the Elections Commission at the time that the Gear case was filed, also in March. Mr. Knudsen was then the chair of the Elections Commission. Now Ann Jacobs is the chair. It rotates on a periodic basis. Both of those cases were filed in April, and they were able to gain some relief for the April election. As your listeners might remember, we did get there was an extension of the absent of the online registration period before the April election, and there was relief granted where absentee ballots were counted as long as they had been mailed in and postmarked on or before election day. They were counted if they came in within 6 days of election day. After the April election, both the DNC plaintiffs and the GEAR plaintiffs asked the court for additional relief for this November election. And there are two other cases. One is called Swenson versus Bostelman, and one is called Edwards versus Voss. So those four cases were all lumped together in the federal trial court here in Madison for a hearing last August, at the beginning of August, about what kind of relief the court should grant for the November election. And the different cases asked for different kinds of relief. There's some overlap. There are some things that multiple sets of plaintiffs asked for. There's some things only one set of plaintiffs asked for. And the court ultimately, on September 21st, issued an order granting five specific areas of relief to change the law for the November election here in Wisconsin that the court thought would make it make sure that people did not have to choose between protecting their health and exercising their fundamental right to vote. The biggest and most headline-grabbing of those was, again, a six-day extension of when absentee ballots can be received. Let me just clarify what the law, what the statutes say so that everybody can understand. In Wisconsin, an absentee ballot has to be received by the municipal clerk who runs the election for the town, city, or village where you live by 8 p.m. on election day to be counted. And this year, because of the tremendous volume of absentee ballots that have been requested, it has taken longer for absentee ballots to go out in some circumstances. And because of the challenges that the Postal Service has faced and its express warning to the state of Wisconsin that not all election-related mail will be processed as quickly as it usually would, the court granted relief and said, we can't guarantee that people who do everything right, they follow all of the rules, they look up the law and they comply with the statutes perfectly. We can't guarantee that those people will have their absentee ballots counted. And it's really a problem if people do nothing wrong and yet they lose their right to vote. So the court granted the same relief that the U.S. Supreme Court had approved in April and said that as long as a ballot is postmarked on or before election day, it will be counted if the municipal clerk receives it up to 6 days later. There was some additional relief. As you and your listeners might remember, Carousel, in April, one of the problems we had with an election during the pandemic was that in some municipalities, we had a tremendously reduced number of precincts where people could go and vote. Yes. We're lucky that here in Madison, that wasn't a big problem. But in the city of Milwaukee, for example, they usually have 180 polling places, and they had five.
That was a travesty in the city of Green Bay, April. That happened.
Absolutely. In the city of Green Bay, they usually have 31, and they had two. Well, why was that the case? The reason that these municipalities had trouble opening polling places was because they didn't have enough poll workers to staff those polling places. And one of the things that contributes to that is that we have a statute here in Wisconsin that says, if you want to work at the polls, you can only do so in the county where you live. Hmm. And that's kind of a strange law, and it's not really clear what the value or the purpose of that is, especially for people who live near the edge of a county. It might be a lot closer to work in a polling place across the county line than one on the other side of their county. And why shouldn't they be able to do that? In addition, for both the April election and for the August partisan primary, Governor Evers mobilized the National Guard and made National Guard members available to work the polls in an effort to alleviate some of the shortages of poll workers. But that was hampered by the fact that even National Guard members are only supposed to work at the polls in the counties where they permanently reside. Hmm. And so Judge Conley, at our request, set aside that statute for this election and said that people could work Wisconsin registered voters could work the polls anywhere in the state of Wisconsin in an effort to make sure that municipal clerks, county clerks, and the Wisconsin Elections Commission can deploy the human resources, the poll workers, the people who volunteer to do this, and some of they get paid. I don't mean volunteer entirely, but the people who step up and agree to serve in this capacity, that they can deploy them in the most efficient and effective way around the state so that we can have as many polling places open as possible and give people as much right to vote as possible. A third piece of relief in this case was restoring longstanding law that had been changed by the legislature recently, that people who have that people can receive absentee ballots by email if necessary. So for a long time that had been the case. You could receive your absentee ballot by email or by fax, and you could then print it out and mail it back. That is now by statute available only to those voters who are overseas or in the military. But Judge Conley said, because of the concerns about the mail and the surge in absentee ballot requests, that if a voter had properly requested their absentee ballot and the system showed that the absentee ballot had been mailed, but nonetheless the ballot had not been received by the voter, then between the dates of October 22nd and October 29th, the voter could contact their municipal clerk and receive a copy of the ballot by email. So, there were two other smaller pieces of relief: one extending online voter registration deadlines, and one about how the Elections Commission communicates about a specific provision of the absentee voter code. Those two things sort of fallen by the wayside as we've gone up on appeal. Because after Judge Conley issued this relief on September 21st, the Wisconsin legislature was unhappy and challenged that. And they took it up to the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, which is our regional court of appeals for the federal courts. And the Seventh Circuit said Judge Conley's order should not go into effect, that he had issued it too close to the election. And if he had made these decisions in May, 6 months before the election, maybe we could be having this conversation. But that to issue this relief in September was simply too late, and categorically it was inappropriate. And so they said, we are sort of freezing this order, and we are not letting it take effect. You know, that's really an unfortunate ruling. It's not what the U.S. Supreme Court's guidance on when courts can make decisions before elections says. And it's really kind of crazy. I mean, if you think about it, in May, we had no idea that we would see the kind of spikes in COVID that we have seen right now in Wisconsin. In May, we had no idea that we were going to have the challenges with the U.S. Postal Service that we're facing right now in Wisconsin. And so it's a completely unreasonable and unrealistic standard that the Seventh Circuit applied and tried to hold Judge Conley and the plaintiffs in these cases to. And at that point, we all filed emergency applications to the United States Supreme Court asking them to lift the stay that the Seventh Circuit had placed on Judge Conley's order. And so we're waiting to hear back. That's where things stand. The plaintiffs in each of the cases have filed briefs. The legislature has filed briefs opposing this. There have been some amicus or friend of the court briefs filed in the Supreme Court about this. Governor Evers filed one to support the relief that Judge Conley had granted and to explain to the U.S. Supreme Court just how dire things are in terms of our COVID situation here in Wisconsin right now and why it is entirely reasonable to expect that that will change people's conduct around the election. And we wait. The Supreme Court could act any day or really any minute.
Any minute now. Great. So, Jeff, thank you for laying all that out, and thank you for, you know, being part of this litigation with, I mean, those victories, the four things in particular that you named and the others as well, are, I mean, that's huge, allowing people to serve as a poll worker outside of their county, allowing absentee ballots to be counted if they're postmarked, allowing absentee ballots to be emailed. I mean, these are critical things that will have an impact. I want to ask you to take a little bit of a deeper dive. On what basis did Judge Conley, help me understand this as someone that doesn't know the details of the litigation beyond what you've described, but sort of in general, you say, okay, if a law says X, then a judge can't break the law. So if a law says you have to live within the county, what kind of legal authority is it? Is it particularly because we're living in a pandemic, an international one, let alone a national one, let alone one with huge spikes, where Wisconsin is unfortunately one of the epicenters currently in the country, in the nation, internationally. But does that sort of give some legal authority to take these laws and make changes to them?
Well, what Judge Connolly found and what we urged is that the United States Constitution guarantees everyone a right to vote and guarantees equal protection of the laws so that everyone should have an equal right to vote. Everyone who is eligible to vote, of course, that is. And what Judge Connolly found was that under the current conditions, as you say, with respect to the pandemic, that simply wasn't going to be the case. So the judge did not find that there's something facially wrong with these laws. That is, he didn't say these laws violate the Constitution on their own and they can never possibly be implemented in a way that would be constitutional. What he said is under the current circumstances, because of the pandemic, applying these laws as written will interfere with some Wisconsinites exercising their constitutional right to vote, and that's unacceptable. And so that's the basis on which he ruled. And I do want to underscore, you're right, these can have tremendous, tremendous impact. In the April election, the number of absentee ballots that came in and were able to be counted in the 6 days after Election Day because of the relief that Judge Connolly granted was just shy of 80,000. 80,000 people were able to vote because of these lawsuits, and that's more than 5% of the total number of people who voted in the state of Wisconsin in our April election. So more than one out of every 20 people, their vote counted only because plaintiffs went to court and asked for this relief, and the courts granted it. And so for the legislature or the Seventh Circuit to now be saying, oh, come on, all you needed to do was plan ahead, and there's almost nobody who is going to get caught in this anyway, because everyone knows we're having a pandemic and everyone has certainly planned ahead and mailed their things in much earlier this time. There's just no basis for saying that. There's no requirement in the law that people need to vote earlier than the law says that they do. We have another presidential debate yet this week. There are plenty of people, as we all keep seeing on the news, who are still trying to make up their mind about various issues on the ballot or various races on the ballot. And Judge Connolly found, as a matter of fact, having considered evidence and testimony, that most likely the 6 day extension here would ensure that more than 100,000 votes would be counted that otherwise would be deemed to have been returned too late. So this is a pretty big deal.
And as you noted, the Court of Appeals, when they sort of said the decision couldn't go into effect, they didn't say it because they didn't agree with the reasoning. Their argument was because of the timing.
That's correct. They just issued sort of this broad stroke rule that they thought it was simply too late and that September is too close to November for there to be any changes in election law at that point. Uh-huh. And as I said before, that's just not what federal election law provides for. That's not the way it works. There is, to be sure, a federal decision from the U.S. Supreme Court a few years ago called Purcell, where the court said that it is really, really important that federal courts be careful in changing the laws on the eve of an election, because we want to make sure that what we don't do is have courts stepping in and changing the rules in ways that confuse voters and therefore disenfranchise people who otherwise would have been able to vote. But here, of course, none of the relief that Judge Connolly granted, A, is going to confuse people, because for the most part, it is similar to the relief that they've had before, right? We had the 6 day extension in April, and right, there was a lot of press coverage, and people know that. Or it's something that's completely invisible to the voter. The average voter neither knows nor cares where the people working at the polls live.
Right.
But this is all relief that would make it easier for people to vote and would ensure that more votes get cast. So there's no way in which this is going to disenfranchise anyone. And as a result, the Purcell decision really doesn't apply here. And what the Seventh Circuit did was paint with far too broad of a brush and create a massive new rule that is simply unfounded and inappropriate.
Interesting. We're talking with Attorney Jeff Mandel about Wisconsin election cases, laws, and things that are being litigated as we speak. If you want to join the conversation, we'd love to have you. Give us a call at area code 608-256-2001. Extension 9, and then Rochelle will connect with you. And if you want to leave a message with Rochelle for her to pass on to me and Jeff, I'm happy to do that. And if you want to speak on the air, we'd love to have your voice. Area code 608-256-2001, extension 9. Okay, so Jeff, we're just waiting. As of right now, none of that relief is granted. As of right now, we're just waiting for the U.S. Supreme Court. And what could the Supreme Court do? Their options are nothing. Tell me what the choices are, what we could hear from them. And tie this into, they made a decision, they issued a decision. Well, I'm not sure what to call it. You're going to have to help me. Came out yesterday regarding the Pennsylvania law, not identical, but regarding election issues, and which, by the way, they didn't say it's untimely, but they deadlocked at a 4-4 decision. Is that something that could be headed our way?
Well, so that's entirely something that could be headed our way. We'll have to see. But here are the options before the Supreme Court. They're facing an emergency application, because one in each of these cases, to lift the Seventh Circuit stay and grant the relief that the plaintiffs in each case had won below. And so the court can grant that application, and that would restore the order that Judge Conley had put into place and allow that relief to apply for the November election, or the court can deny the application and leave the Seventh Circuit stay in place and leave the law, as you correctly state, Carousel, where none of these forms of relief, none of these ways of trying to ensure that the COVID-19 pandemic does not interfere with our election, none of those things are in place. And we could hear literally any moment. You referenced the Pennsylvania orders last night, in which the Supreme Court left in place decisions from the Pennsylvania State Supreme Court that expanded voting rights in some ways, including one that sounds very similar to our case, which is that the Pennsylvania Supreme Court had said that any absentee ballot that is received within 3 days after Election Day would be counted, even if it was mailed after Election Day in that instance, which is a little bit different. And last night, that case had been pending up at the U.S. Supreme Court for a couple of weeks. The Pennsylvania Supreme Court ruled and granted that relief, and the Republican Party of Pennsylvania had filed asking the U.S. Supreme Court to step in. Last night, the Supreme Court deadlocked 4-4 and could not decide what to do. Remember that Justice Ginsburg died in September, and so there is a vacancy at the U.S. Supreme Court. The United States Senate is considering a nominee from the president to fill that vacancy, but for now, we have 8 justices. And when the justices split evenly, what that means is that the decision below remains in place. Mm-hmm. So last night, the justices split 4-4 on whether to step in and stay or overrule that Pennsylvania Supreme Court relief. And so the Pennsylvania relief stays in place. We, in our Wisconsin cases, were in a different position because right now the decision below is that Judge Conley's order is stayed. So for that relief to take effect, we need 5 justices to say that the Seventh Circuit made a mistake and to grant our application to lift the stay. And so, it's not entirely clear what we can learn from last night's opinions. The pessimistic view would be to say, well, They only found four votes last night that wanted to make sure that elections could be collected, that ballots could be collected after Election Day. And you had four justices Thomas, Gorsuch, Alito, and Kavanaugh, who voted to set aside the Pennsylvania decision. And so if those same four justices voted to leave in place the stay that the Seventh Circuit applied here in Wisconsin, then our applications for relief would fail.
Right.
And that's one way to see it. On the other hand, there really are fairly significant differences between the Pennsylvania case and ours, including that the Pennsylvania case said that the votes didn't even have to be postmarked on Election Day. And so there are things that maybe some of those justices who were unhappy with the Pennsylvania decision, maybe there are some things about Wisconsin that would make them a little bit more comfortable. And we just have to wait and see.
We have a call coming in. Right now we're talking with Jeff Mandel, a partner at the law firm of Stafford Rosenbaum, about election law cases that he's been working on that are pending here in Wisconsin and beyond. We have a call coming in. Thanks so much for joining the conversation. Thomas, you had a question about counting the ballots.
Yes, my question was that I thought I'd read or heard that not only do the ballots have to be postmarked by the proper day, Election Day, but that Wisconsin courts are requiring them all to be counted before the end of the Election Day in order to be valid counting and valid ballots. So my question is that correct? Or if the clerk receives the ballot by 8 o'clock on the Election Day, that ballot can be counted any time after that? Is there a limited number of days in which they are allowed to count them? And I'll hang up and listen to your answer, and thank you for the program.
Thanks for the question, thanks, Thomas. So. Jeff, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Thomas. It's a great question. So under statute, ballots do need to be received by 8 p.m. on Election Day. And then there are a lot of rules in Wisconsin statutes about how and where and when we count ballots, including absentee ballots. So let me see if I can give you an overview of those and hopefully answer your question in the process. There are two different ways that municipalities can count absentee ballots in the state of Wisconsin. The default rule is that you count the absentee ballots at the precinct where the person would have voted if they had voted in person. And so what that means is that when your ballot is received by the municipal clerk, whether you vote by mail and it comes in advance, or whether you vote at what we sort of colloquially call early voting, but is technically in-person absentee voting, and that starts today, so if you want to go vote, you can vote in person starting today. What happens is when you do that, the envelope that seals your ballot is held in the clerk's office. And here in the city of Madison, for example, on Election Day, they distribute all of those ballots, all of those envelopes, to the precincts where the voter who cast each ballot would have cast their ballot. That's their assigned precinct. And when there are slow moments during the day and the line is dying down a little bit, then the poll workers open those ballots and count them as if those people were voting in person at that moment. The alternative that about 35 municipalities around the state use is called a central count. And they do this in Milwaukee, they do it in Green Bay, they do it in several other places, where instead of counting absentee ballots on a precinct by precinct level, they count them all in one place. And either way, whether you're using a precinct-based counting or a central count, the ballots get counted on Election Day. They do not get counted in advance. That's actually one of the things we had asked Judge Conley to say, is that we could start counting ballots in advance because we expect such a massive surge in absentee ballots this year. And Judge Conley did not think that that was necessary, and so did not grant that part of the relief. They count them on Election Day. And your question, Thomas, is what happens to those ballots that don't get counted before the polls close? And that certainly happens, whether we're at central count in a big city or whether we are counting on a precinct by precinct level. Sometimes not all of the ballots will be counted by the time the polls are scheduled to close and the last person who was in line at 8 p.m. gets to vote. And that's okay. We keep counting until all of those ballots are counted. And so sometimes that takes until late at night on election day or even in the middle of the night. And sometimes, and we might expect to see this year because of the huge number of absentee ballots, sometimes that takes longer. It might take a couple of days or maybe even more than a couple of days. And in this instance, if the relief that we have obtained from Judge Conley's order is put back into place by the U.S. Supreme Court and ballots can arrive for up to 6 days after Election Day, then obviously those ballots that arrive within the allowed time window will also be counted, and they can't be counted until they're received. So the counting will not be completely done until the window for receiving those ballots has closed and there's been a little bit of time to count those ballots that came in at the very end of the window.
So, Jeff, explain to us how, if Judge Connolly's relief is put back into place, and as it happened in April, it will happen again, that we voters' absentee ballots have 6 days to arrive. How does that address declaring a winner? I know in April, even though, as you said, this was in place, and I didn't know the number until you told us today, 80,000 ballots came in. The election results in April were announced right after the election. So is it that these extra ballots will perhaps impact the election if the election results are too close to count? Or how do you anticipate that being an issue on election eve and the next day of deciding how Wisconsin voted?
Well, we had a slightly different situation in April, because then what Judge Conley had ordered was that the ballots would not be counted at all until everything had come in. So while your recollection, Carousel, might be that we knew on election night, we actually didn't know. There were no results announced until Monday the 13th of April, even though election day was on Tuesday the 7th. Hmm. Here we have a slightly different situation. Judge Conley has not ordered that the counting be held until then. And so we have a situation that I think we're all pretty accustomed to, which is, as we watch the election results roll in, whether that's on the evening of November 3rd or sometime on November 4th, as we watch them roll in, we'll start to see that there's some margin, and we will also have a pretty good sense of how many absentee ballots in each county remain outstanding and yet to be counted. And the Associated Press and others will, do their statistical magic to tell us when the number of ballots that have already been counted so far outweighs the number of ballots that are yet to be counted, that they have a strong understanding and an ability to tell us who won the state of Wisconsin. But it might take a few days. We are talking about, traditionally here in Wisconsin, before April of 2020, we averaged between 4% and 6% of the voters in any given election were voting by absentee. But the estimates from the Elections Commission for the November election is that approximately 70%, 70% of voters are going to vote absentee. So that's a 12-fold increase. I mean, it's just, it's as if we're running a completely different election in some ways. And yeah. So it could take some time to count all those ballots and know what the results are.
Jeff, let's talk about a couple other cases that are pending. There's so much to talk about. I really appreciate the detail that we're going through. Talk to us about, I'm interested in the voter purge case. Is there any concern that this is going to be decided in the next few weeks? It's hard to figure that implement. But tell us about this case where the Wisconsin Elections Commission didn't purge voters' lists, and there was a lawsuit challenging that they should have.
Sure. So this case is called Zignago versus Wisconsin Elections Commission, and it is pending at the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Oral arguments in that case were held on September 29th of this year. And this case started a little bit more than a year ago, and it is about how the Wisconsin Elections Commission and those who administer our elections around the state of Wisconsin handle voter registration for people who have moved, who have changed their address. And let me first answer your initial question, which is there a worry that this case is going to come down in the next 2 weeks and change the November election? And the answer to that question is no. I think it's, number one, very unlikely that the Supreme Court will get its work finished and issue an opinion in this case before Election Day. And number two, even if it did, because the election has really already begun and is well underway, I don't think that it would be a time when the Elections Commission or municipal clerks would be changing the rules or making changes at this instance. So I don't think there's really any serious chance that the decision in this case or in the other elections related case that was also argued to the Wisconsin Supreme Court on September 29th will change the elections of change the process or the results of this election. Okay. But let me quickly explain the Zignago case.
Here's a little bit of the details. And I know I'll remind our listeners, we had a conversation. I think we've had two conversations about a U.S. Supreme Court decision that allowed it sort of set up a process, and you'll explain to us how what we're doing in Wisconsin, but allowed a process that allowed voters to be purged if there were postcards and notifications sent out. And we've talked about this a couple of times on this show, but I mean, this decision is several years old by now. So, and this seems to be the first time in Wisconsin there was an attempt based on that decision to purge voter rolls on a statewide level. Is that accurate?
Well, so this is actually the second time. You're talking about the Ohio decision from a few years ago.
Yes.
Here's how it works. Sort of from time immemorial, right, we need to know who is registered to vote. And so we maintain a voter roll that includes all of the people who are registered to vote. And you're registered to vote at the place where you reside, where you live, and you consider to be your primary residential address. But when you move, then you are supposed to change and update your voter registration. And there are lots of ways to do that. In many states, they do that when you change your driver's license because they have the National Voter Registration Act, or what most people call the Motor Voter Law. Here in Wisconsin, we are exempt from that law. We do not participate in Motor Voter. And the reason is that we have same-day voter registration. You can show up at the polls in Wisconsin and you can register to vote on the spot, and that's not true in most places. And because of that, we're exempt from Motor Voter. So you can go to the polls, and if you show proper ID and proof that your address has changed, they'll register you or update your registration right there. But in an effort to make the law and the rolls more systematic and cleaner, there are two laws that are relevant. First is we've had for a long, decades and decades and decades, almost a century, we've had in this state statutes that instruct municipal clerks to act when they have reliable information that a voter has changed their address. And what the municipal clerk is supposed to do, as you referenced, Carousel, is the municipal clerk is supposed to send a letter or a postcard to that person saying, hey, I have this reliable information. I think your address has moved. Please let me know if I'm incorrect, and we should maintain your voter registration at this address. And if I don't hear back from you, we're going to take you off the rolls. So that's the first law. The second law is a federal law, the Help America Vote Act, which required every state to adopt a statewide electronic voter roll. And we do that here in Wisconsin. In 2017, and then on top of that, to help clean up those statewide electronic voter rolls, Wisconsin is one of several states, more than half of them, that participate in a service called ERIC, which is an effort to collect and share among states information about who is eligible to vote and hasn't been registered, and also ERIC collects information about people who may have moved. So ERIC sends the state every couple of years a list of all the people who are on Wisconsin's electronic voter roll, who, for various reasons, the ERIC database has information that was given to the government that suggests those people might have moved. And what kind of information might that be? Maybe someone filed a change of address request with the United States Postal Service, or maybe someone registered a car at another address.
Gotcha.
Separate from the one where they're registered to vote. But that doesn't mean those people have moved. There are lots of reasons for either of those things, as you can imagine, that don't involve actually changing your address. Some people go on a long vacation and have their mail forwarded, or have an illness and have their mail forwarded. Some people register a car at their business address or at their vacation home, or their kid takes their car to college and they register the car there. That doesn't mean those people have moved and should be removed from the voter rolls. In 2017, the Elections Commission did, acting on one of these ERIC lists, remove people from the list. They sent postcards. They said, if you don't get back to us within a very short period of time, we're going to take you off the list. They did not hear back from very many people, and they removed hundreds of thousands of voters from the Wisconsin list. And what they found was that there was a very high error rate. A lot of the people who were removed should not have been and needed to re-register. And there was confusion and dissatisfaction.
Right.
So
people,
in 2019,
people would show up at the poll, right? And think they're registered to vote and there to vote. And they don't have necessarily the documents that prove different documents that you need to re-register versus your photo ID to just vote, and all of a sudden they're confused at the poll. That happened.
Yes, it did, and that's exactly right. It takes more paperwork and more proof of identity and residence to register to vote than it does just to show your voter ID and vote. So if you, yes, you can register same day at the polls, but if you didn't know you needed to register, you might not have everything you need. So in 2019, when ERIC sent a new movers list that had about 334,000 people that it said, well, these people might have moved, the Elections Commission sent all those people a postcard, and it said, we have information that you might have moved. But this time, the postcard did not say, we're going to take you off the voter rolls if you don't respond.
Ah.
And it also said, it gave a much longer time. So it said, if we haven't heard from you, by after the November 2020 election, then we're going to look into this more. And it turns out that the statute that I mentioned before that says that we want to keep the voter rolls clean, one of the things I said before was that a municipal clerk who has received reliable information is supposed to take steps to deal with this. That's different than the state elections commission. We have extremely decentralized elections here in Wisconsin, more decentralized than anywhere else in the entire United States. And our elections are really run by our 1,850 municipal clerks. And they're the ones who are supposed to, under the state statute, they're the ones who are supposed to really deal with this. Well, some individuals represented by the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, which is a right-wing nonprofit in Milwaukee, were unhappy that the Elections Commission had not purged the hundreds of thousands of people who didn't respond to these postcards within 30 days. And so they filed a lawsuit in state court in Ozaukee County, and they asked the court to order the Elections Commission to take all these people off the rolls. And the court did so. This was last December, so December of 2019. And the Elections Commission immediately appealed and said, no, that's not what the law says. And we're not going to do this until we're confident that everything is correct. There was some procedural wrangling. It got a little bit messy about whether the case was going to proceed in the Wisconsin Court of Appeals in the first instance, or if it was going to go straight to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And while that procedural back and forth was happening, the circuit court judge in Ozaukee County got very impatient, and he actually held the Elections Commission in contempt for not having stripped those people off of the rolls. And
wow.
He was fining the Elections Commission and some of the commissioners on a daily basis. When ultimately the Supreme Court decided the case should be heard in the Court of Appeals in the first instance, the Court of Appeals decided that Ozaukee County Circuit Court had gotten it completely wrong, that this is a municipal issue, not something that the State Elections Commission can do, and that there are real questions about how reliable this information is, whether it is sufficiently reliable to actually take people off the rolls. And so the Court of Appeals said, yeah, we're not stripping these people off the rolls. And the plaintiffs appealed that to the Wisconsin Supreme Court, where, as I noted, we had argument on September 29th of this year. And I would expect a decision sometime in 2021.
Fascinating. I can't wait to see what happens with that case. And I mean, that's just interesting to even, I'd love to go into more details about understanding, especially if they said, didn't say anything about removal and said, we'll talk to you after November. Wow, that's interesting. So Jeff, we only have like 2 minutes left with you before we have to end. There's so many more cases that we could talk about. Is there any sort of final thoughts of while all this is pending, how do we make sure people aren't confused and know what they need to do so that their ballot is counted in the election in 2 weeks?
There are so many more cases. There's so much going on. I would just encourage all of your listeners to vote. A lot of these fights, a lot of the confusion around this is really designed to suppress the vote and to disenfranchise people. And yeah, the most important thing people can do is not give in, is not despair, is continue to vote, to exercise their rights to vote, and to help other people exercise their rights to vote. If your listeners have questions or are at all concerned, the Leadership Conference for Civil Rights maintains a national hotline that you can call for election protection. If anyone calls 866-OUR-VOTE, 866-OURVOTE, that will connect you with lawyers who can answer all of your questions about voter registration and voter procedure. They can help you figure out if you're registered. They can help you figure out where your polling place is. They can help you figure out what hours your polling place has, when early voting is, what your options are. And if you're having a specific problem at a polling place or with an absentee ballot, those lawyers will put you in touch with experienced election law attorneys here in the state of Wisconsin who can help make sure that your problem is solved and that your vote is counted. Because that's the most important thing all of us can do, is step in. This is ultimately not a partisan issue. What we want is we want everyone who is eligible to cast their vote and have their voice counted so that they can be part of our democracy.
Well, this has been fantastic. Thank you for that phone number. We'll try and spread the word. It's been great talking with you. Jeff Mandel, partner at Stafford Rosenbaum, leader on election law issues. Thanks so much, Jeff, for joining us and for all the work that you're doing. And we'll keep paying attention and see what happens on some of these cases.
Thanks, Carousel. It's always a pleasure. And maybe after the election, we can come back and talk about where some of these things stand, because election law only gets attention in the weeks leading up to the election, but obviously the best time to figure out what the rules are going to be is when we don't have an election right on top of us.
Absolutely. I would love to have you back in the future. Thanks so much. And thanks everyone for listening. Go out and vote, and we'll see you again next week. Bye, everybody.
This never heard before. We bring the sound communication of our tribal war. Dark vision fly by helicopters in the night. Attempt triangulation of our station in the fight.